And let's welcome in an old friend.
Hey, guys.
Roman Oben, former Giants lineman. I guess now technically should I say former Giants broadcaster, Mr. Executive for the National Football
League? Yeah, well, we're still in I guess you could say that for now. We'll see what happens in preseason.
Welcome. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Man, good to be here. I was just thinking about my first combine experience driving from Louisville.
Talk to us. What was it like?
Yeah, driving from Louisville, which is about an hour and 45 minutes away from here, and I got in an accident. In the snow.
No.
Slammed my brakes, hit a guy in the back.
Boy.
And so, like, that last 30 minutes, I'm driving my bumper dragging on the highway. So I pulled over, ripped it off, like, stuck in the trunk. I pulled up in the, whatever the... It was, I think it was like a Hilton hotel with a Holiday Inn with the big train. Yeah. They still have that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, welcome to the NFL. So I'm glad I made it in one piece.
Oh,
so,
that's great.
I mean, kind of, what are these guys going through? Again, today, the offensive linemen, the tight ends, they strut their stuff. The 40, all the shuttle drills and everything that they had to do. How nerve-wracking is that? How nervous were they today while we were all watching them on television?
Well, I think they're not as nervous as they are actually more prepared. And I think you've seen the trend over the last 5 years when they started putting the combines on television. That's when you had more participation. So when I came out, I mean, John Ogden, Tony Baselli, I mean, they didn't run because you had to come to their school and get them to run. Now
the
pro days, now the guys that are considered the top 10, 15 guys are participating because of this, and they're doing these kind of combine type of training, high school into college. I mean, you're seeing 7-on-7 all over the place. So guys are more prepared now, and you've seen them do a lot more stuff to this point. So they're not as nervous. They're actually anxious, meaning you want to do well, versus nervous, you're not prepared.
We're joined by former Giants offensive lineman Roman Oben. Roman will take a couple calls with us, too, at 201-939-451. If you want to get on the line, we'll try to squeeze you in as we go ahead here with Roman. With these drills, Roman, I know you were in meetings today. You weren't watching the guys that were out there. But what drills to you are the most important for an offensive lineman to succeed at here that tells you, you know what, when he gets on the field on a Sunday in the NFL, he's going to be a pretty darn good lineman?
Well, one thing, you know, obviously once you get past the size, the height and weight comparison, is a guy listed at 6'5", and he's really now 6'3.5" when he comes here. You know, so what's his minimum height?
Right.
His minimum weight? What's his strength? But in terms of the drills, you really want to see how well they change direction and if a guy is a waist bender or a knee bender. Because obviously when you're doing a drill, you don't have a NFL defensive lineman in front of you or a linebacker in front of you. You've got a coach pointing one way or the other. But now you have to see if a guy can pull and suddenly change one way or the other, and then that'll determine, at least in a microcosm, like what a guy can do on Sunday, 1 o'clock, with a guy in front of him, you know, in a game-like situation.
Now you say, is a guy a knee bender or a waist bender? Knee bender good, waist bender
bad. Waist bender is bad.
Explain why for the fans out there that might not know.
I mean, let's take the basketball analogy. If you're defending a point guard and you're stiff-legged with knee bends, and he's going to get right around you. Now,
right.
If you're shuffling properly, that's knee bends with a back and waist upright. That's a good athletic position for any sport, but in offensive line in particular, that's the best way to approach. Again, moving your feet without having to lean and shift your weight one way or the other.
All right. Well, let's specifically talk about the Giants' offensive line. Right, Will Beattie, Richburg expected to play center. Jeff Schwartz back healthy. Pugh. What do you anticipate the Giants to do in regard to going after a tackle, a guard, maybe somebody who can play both? Do you expect them to move Pugh into guard? Maybe they specifically go after a tackle. What do you envision the Giants to do right now?
Well, unless you draft a lineman in that first or second pick, that you expect him to plug him and start, a la Pugh 2 years ago, I think you have – and it's funny Schwartz actually said on the show on First and Ten that he prefers the right side guard or tackle. I mean, he said that, and I kind of asked him so that he could. So that means you could put Pugh at left guard, and now you get a guy who's maybe a pure right guard or right tackle. But the guys that are coming out now, you've got to be so versatile. If you're a guard, if you're a tackle, you've got to be able to go inside. If you're only a guard or center, you've got to be able to snap and play both guards. I mean, go back to 2011 Super Bowl season played in this stadium. Kevin Booth saved the season by starting 9 games at 3 different positions. So,
absolutely.
Having that rock star left tackle, right tackle is important, but it's also important to make sure a guy's versatile enough that he can give you the best options. And if he's one of the 5 best guys, he will start at one of the positions of need.
Now, in terms of two of the young offensive linemen that the Giants have been developing, I'm curious your perspective on the progress that Justin Pugh in 2 years and Weston Richburg in 1 year have made on the offensive line, and where do you think they should be focused on getting better to become Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen?
Well, I think Pugh obviously started as a rookie, first guy to do that since LT, and you know, took his lumps early in the year and got better as the year went on. And then year two, now you know how to be professional, and then you had that game against the Eagles on a Sunday night, obviously, but then he had the injury. So I knew he would have bounced back a lot better had he had more time to play. And I think the game that he came back, and I can't remember the game that he came back, like, you were hoping that he came back because you didn't know who was going to start.
You're right.
So, I mean, Pugh's, sometimes when you go through your bumps and bruises early in your career as an offensive lineman, that really gives you that perspective. Like, Pugh should be a solid, you know, Pro Bowl caliber player this year.
Do you see him as a guard or tackle?
I think he could be a great guard because he doesn't have the range in terms of his arms. I think he'd be a great guard. He can pull. He can run. He's right at that 305 to 310 size in terms of weight. His height, 6'4". So he's not a tall, big, tall guy that's always got to constrict. I think Richburg, who was a natural center in college, the fact that he played guard gave him the ability to block without a ball in his hand. So it made him a better zone blocker, a better puller. So when he goes to center, now he's a better center because he's played guard.
So those skills will transfer.
Yeah, 100%.
A position we really haven't talked about since we started the show, and we're talking about the offensive linemen, obviously, to protect Eli Manning, but also to run the football.
Great point.
Rashad Jennings, you know what you get with him when he is healthy. He fits the system to a T, especially catching passes out of the backfield. Nice 1-2 punch with Andre Williams, but no David Wilson. And David Wilson was going to have a role. He was going to be a part of the system. If the Giants go out, whether it's free agency or the draft, do you think they look for that kind of running back, that type of what David Wilson could have brought to the program if the Giants go out and address the running back position as maybe a third three-headed monster in that backfield?
Yeah, I mean, 100%, because if you look at the model of what's worked in the NFL, you know, Darren Sproles, Reggie Bush, I mean, these teams are using guys like that are matchup nightmares for the defense. So can you defend – can your will linebacker, your safety defend a Darren Sproles or a guy like what Dave Wilson would have been? And if a guy like that is in that second, third round or maybe a free agent guy, I mean, that poses a matchup nightmares, and that puts you on offense when you're on offense. So that puts you in attack mode.
You want to take a couple calls, Roman?
Yeah, let's do a couple.
201-939-4513. Charlie in Portland, Maine, our good buddy, is on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Charlie, welcome to the show, my friend. Hope you survived
the
snow.
Hey, John.
Up there.
How you all doing?
Doing well. Yeah.
Roman?
Hey, Charlie.
Hi. Hey, tell my cousin I said hello. I miss Ralph.
Okay, no problem. Charlie's last name is Vacchiani.
Oh, right.
Oh,
okay, now I get it. I'm slow today.
Hey, I got a question. I guess it's, you know, when you're talking about Eli, and, all, you know, you kind of brought it up, John. All I have to do is say Phil Simms. You know, we did that with Phil Simms. We said, nah, you can't play anymore. Let's get rid of you. We got Dave Brown, and look what happened. It was a disaster. Yeah. Eli is our franchise quarterback. He needs to stay. And I'm massive nice, but he is not. Eli won 2 Super Bowls, MVPs, won the game, biggest games in 2-minute drives. I mean, this guy is clutch. If I was a coach and I had a quarterback and I was going to pick, like, who do I want in the Super Bowl in the last 2 minutes to win the game for me, it wouldn't be Joe Montana, it wouldn't be Brady, it would be Eli Manning.
Wow.
Period. End of story.
No, I mean, that's great optimism. And I think,
thank you, Charlie.
Charlie, and I think fans, you know, kind of need to understand that, you know, as a player, you know, when history's been on your side, I mean, you're almost – it's almost a bad thing because you know what you've been able to do in this league. You know you've won.
So there's expectations.
Yeah, the expectation goes a lot higher. Mm-hmm. And people, including yourself, when you look in the mirror every day, you want to get back to that level of play. And Eli Manning obviously is a clutch guy when he gets to that point. I mean, he has it, but he hasn't gotten to that point, or the team hasn't gotten to that position in 4 years. So you hope that through the diligence of the scouting, coaching, you know, the improvements that have been made, you know, Spags is back defensively. You hope that you get a defense that can create turnovers and give you the ball in the plus territory. And I mean, all that helps a quarterback. You know, the best friend of a quarterback is a running game and a solid defense. Then you're throwing the ball when you want to throw it, dictating third downs, et cetera. So, but definitely Eli Manning, in terms of the landscape of the National Football League, he is a quarterback that a team. He's one of the teams that you don't have to worry about because you've got the quarterback position solved. And there's only, you know, less than a dozen, probably half a dozen teams I can say we definitively have a quarterback solved. Not a guy we know that's going to start next year, but that position is solved. Now we got to build around that.
Well, yeah. The worst place you can be is showing up at this combine and saying, oh, man, we got to find the quarterback. That you don't want to be
no,
there.
No, you don't want to, because there's 9 out of 10 times it doesn't work.
Here's a list of a few teams that are on the market for quarterbacks. The Bills, the Jets, the Texans, Cleveland, the Bucks, Tennessee, possibly the Rams. I know that Jeff Fisher came out and said that they're committed to Sam Bradford, but, I mean, how many times are you going to go to that well before, you know, unfortunately you just can't stay healthy.
You're right.
The Bears, John Fox. Foxy came out, said that, you know, he's not necessarily committed to Cutler being his starting quarterback. And then, of course, the Eagles. A lot of people anticipating the Eagles to try to trade up, Chip Kelly, trade up, go get his Oregon quarterback, Mark Mariota, to quarterback and possibly trade Nick Foles. So there are a lot of teams on that list and a lot of teams that have been struggling for several years. Why? Because they don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, Nina, it's funny you mentioned – that's about eight teams you mentioned. And you look at the bell curve. The eight teams that are always in need for a quarterback, there are eight teams on the other end that at least have a guy, a solid guy, whether you're a Tom Brady or whoever, or Eli. But then the rest of the league, 16 teams are in the middle, whether they've committed to a guy and maybe they're short term and they want to get to that first tier.
Or they're waiting for him, like a Ryan Tannehill, the verdict is
out on a couple of these guys, right. Whether or not, or they go back to that end of the bell curve, or they're here this time next year needing a quarterback.
And the shame for some of those franchises too, Rams, great defense, but they can't score enough points.
Right.
Bills, great defense. They had Kyle Orton last year, he retires,
can't score
enough points. Browns, pretty darn good defense last year. What happens? You can't score enough points. Why? You got to find that quarterback. Back to the phones at 201-939-4513.
They spent their first-round draft pick on a quarterback. He just has not panned out.
Well, and now that's one of the guys where you're waiting to see.
Right.
And you're seeing if he can pan out, and who knows if that's going to happen or not. John in New York is next. John, what's going on, pal? John, you with us? John going once, John going twice, John is sold. We'll go to the next. Go ahead, Nina. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Do we have him now?
John, are you there now? No, we lost John.
No.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a point as well in regards to, I know we're spending a lot of time talking about Eli Manning. Come on, we know he's not going anywhere. But the excitement, at least for me, okay, based on how the season ended and how strong Odell Beckham Jr. came onto the scene, I mean, I'm really... like, I'm excited.
Well, you should be.
But you remember before the season started last year, we were talking about Eli having to learn a new offense. We really didn't know what to expect. Odell was dealing with hamstring issues, this and that. Well, I mean, I am legitimately, like, excited because I think the chemistry is going to build. You know, what is Victor Cruz going to be able to do? Who do they go out and add to this offense in regard to free agency at the skilled position? I think it's an exciting time, and I commend Odell Beckham Jr. as a rookie for kind of bringing us to this point. Bless you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
You okay?
That. Yeah, I'm good.
I know, and sitting in front of these doors with the
yeah, I know. Yeah, well,
I haven't
taken
off my jacket.
There's a lot of excitement about Odell Beckham, obviously, and he deserved everything he's gotten. He won all the awards, but in terms of the team approach, I mean, you still want to see the running game solve the protection. You want to see a good, solid 1-2 combination. I mean, look at what Julio Jones and Roddy White have done in Atlanta. That hasn't translated to going to the Super Bowl, unfortunately. So, I mean, we have to have that discussion, too. So, the excitement in terms of the numbers. And, I mean, look, I'd love to see they both catch anywhere north of 80 catches. And one has more touchdowns, one has more yards or whatever. But in terms of the team approach, I mean, I think the team is better definitely with Odell Beckham if he builds on last season. And I'm optimistic because anybody look at what happens next year with Cruz's return. But, there are a lot of other pieces that have to come into play so that he's making those plays in January and not in a losing effort against the Dallas Cowboys, which is still like, I don't know how many million YouTube hits or whatever that video has gotten thus far.
201-939-4513. Our good buddy Jeff is up in Rhode Island. Jeff, how's everything, my friend?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Jeff.
Just a note to Anita. Anita, there's plenty of knowledgeable Giants fans in Rhode Island, okay? I just want you to know that. They all don't live in a metropolitan area of New York.
I'm sure there are.
But anyway, Johnny, what I wanted to get at was in terms of the salary cap, I don't know if I'm on board at throwing $15 million at JPP. You know, if we do that in between the Eli Manning situation, it's not going to leave us in a very desirable spot, I don't think. So I don't know. How do you think it's going to play out? I mean, we need money to sign other players as well. And I, as I said before, I'm not on board with throwing $15 million at JPP. So I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
have
Jeff.
A great day.
Appreciate it. Roman, go ahead.
Well, you know, one thing I do know about the Giants' approach, they're never going to compromise the salary cap for one guy. I mean, you'll never see an Albert Haynesworth, you know, type of signing. You'll never see, you know, what other teams have done in terms of just blowing up the cap and hoping one guy does it all. But it always works in the integrity of what their philosophy is. And so if that philosophy means a franchise tag to keep JPP while they work the salary cap going to the next year to sign a long-term deal, then that's what they'll do. And they've lost players because they didn't want to give too much money than what they thought that player was worth. So it all becomes it always goes back to what each organization values that player, and whether it's $2 million or $15 million, doesn't matter. Well, can it fit the integrity of the cap and not ruin the integrity of the team?
And here's the problem. Let's say you decide, all right, well, Jason Pierre-Paul's not worth $14.6 million, whatever the franchise tag ended up being. You still have to replace him. It's not like, you know, it's not like there's another defensive end sitting there on the free agent market that's going to give you Jason Pierre-Paul's production that's going to sign for $7 million. If that's the market, that's the market. And even, you know, these guys you want to draft in the first round, you have guys that have, you know, look at Jadeveon Clowney last year, a can't-miss pass rusher, right? What did he do? He got hurt. He didn't play. DeMarcus Ware in his first year in the league only had 4 or 5 sacks. I mean, it takes these young guys a while to grow into the NFL and become dominant players.
I played with Michael Strahan for 4 years. My first year was his fourth year, 4 or 5 sacks. You know, they draft Cedric Jones. He has to move the other side. Cedric Jones has the eye problem. Then Strahan becomes a Hall of Famer at the left end. He didn't start really dominating until his fifth year. I mean, then he went for 10 years run, but it's, you know, JPP had a lot of success earlier, and I think to some degree that hurt him because he had to still learn how to become a football player, and he's learned that over the last 2 years. His tackles for losses, his defense against the run, all that's improving. We always want to see 15 sacks, 20. We all want to see that number, but I mean, ask J.J. Watt. Like, he's a complete player. Run, pass deflection, interceptions, touchdowns. I mean, and I think JPP has that ability. But again, that early success, I think, sometimes kind of ruined the fans' eyes in terms of what he really has to do to become a complete player where you could just check that box for the next decade at defensive end. And that's what the hopes are for JPP going forward.
Also, I had a chance to talk to a general manager, and he said his formula, and again, every general manager is different, I get that. But his formula, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, is – you want to spend your money on quarterback, tackle, left tackle, quarterback, and corner.
And corner, yeah, that's
and
the
corner.
That's the standard formula.
That is your formula in regard to where you want to spend your big money. Now, you have a price tag. I'm sure the Giants have a price tag on what they'd like to pay JPP. Look, we saw it with Kevin Boss, right? I mean, the Oakland Raiders came at $7 million a year.
They came in with a huge bonus.
It's not like the Giants didn't want Kevin, but that was a number that they weren't willing to pay for
him.
Even
more recent.
So a lot of it is going to depend on, you know, if JPP tests the free agent market, what are other teams, who don't follow that formula, Roman, what are they going to throw at him? And is that in the range that Jerry Reese and the Giants have allotted for him in regard to what they're willing to pay for him?
Well, you obviously take that risk, and from a player standpoint, you have to earn the right to make it difficult for the team to keep you and make it luring for another team to sign you. And let's go back to Martellus Bennett a couple years ago.
Linval Joseph, too, another
Linval,
guy.
Yeah, I mean, people have been saying, oh, man, you wish you had Martellus. But the Giants were never going to give him what Chicago Bears gave him. But, hey, good for him. He wasn't a Pro Bowler this year. He's obviously been an integral part of the Bears, but he didn't fit now he could have played for minimum and stayed in New York, but that was never going to be the option. So,
that's economics.
Yeah, and I think, again, I always try to argue from a player's point. Look, we're all going to be 40 years old one day, and you got to be happy with the decisions you made and be glad that you played as long as you did. And whether, you know, and I think sometimes when you look back, whether the number is 3 million or 4.5, like, really doesn't matter. You know, moving your family around and all that stuff, and I don't know if that's important to JPP or some of these guys at this point, but I know at the end of your career, those kind of things are important, you know, winning a Super Bowl and all that stuff. But you just hope that all the variables come together and it's favorable on the board for everyone.
Roman, thanks so much for the time, my friend. It's very much appreciated.
My pleasure. And I love the suit tie game. I mean, you're Wall Street ready today, man.
Hey, man, this is the big time. The whole NFL world
You brought
world
New York
to
Indianapolis for real,
gotta
man.
Gotta look good, baby.
I love it.
Thank you, Roman.
Thanks.
It's great seeing you, my friend.
Right, thanks.
Good seeing
Get
you.
Get home safe. That's
Congratulations
Giants offensive
line. On your new job.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
How's that going, by the way?
It's going well. I met with USA Football today, and I'm on the National Football Advisory Committee and talking about solving the youth tackle football issue, and we'll definitely have some news later on.
Well, and it is a big issue, and it's a big deal. So thank you very much. We appreciate it, Roman, and best of luck. All right,
yeah,
man?
My pleasure.
Former Giants offensive lineman Roman Oman, we thank him for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll have Jason Lock on 4 from CBS in just a second. For now, let's take...